been talking about prayer for the last few weeks, and we will continue talking about prayer. I just thought it would be good to recap a little bit. I did a first session on prayer. Sadly, it wasn't recorded. We had a few glitches that day. You might have remembered it. It was a technological challenge on that day, and it was rounded off by it not being recorded. So we talked about loving God and loving people. And the way that you love God is to connect to God. So prayer, when we think about prayer, you can interchange the word connection, that we should be connecting with God. We should be, prayer is a connection. We talked about that the disciples asked Jesus to teach us how to pray. So there isn't a, it's something we have to learn. It's something we have to practice. It's something, it's a new language. I often say to people who've been filled with the Spirit and are learning to speak in tongues, it's a new language. It requires practice. It requires learning. It requires confidence. And you'll only do that by repetition. Just as an aside, the SATs tests, spelling tests for these little kids. They were asking them questions that I had no idea. They're 6 and 7 years old. And, I thought to myself, I need to go back to school. I need to get back in there and learn what some of that stuff is. Not just how to spell things, but, you know, the grammar and everything else. I mean, all the teachers were, you know, cheering when the SATs have got, you know, kicked into touch. But anyway, you know, it's something that we have to learn. God measures growth, not, you know, someone says to me, I've been a Christian for 20 years, so what? How much have you grown? How much have you learned? How much have you experienced? How much different are you from 20 years ago? Because Christianity is not just, I've done it, and now I'm clocking up my hours. It's, how much have we grown? How much have we learned? And so the disciples said to Jesus, teach us to pray. Continual exchange. Pete talked about that. Pray on all occasions. So then, as I say, Pete preached the next week and we discussed some stuff. It was good to be here. Normally, if Pete's preaching, I'm away. But this was an opportunity for me to be here and sit enthusiastically on the front row and take my notes, which was a pleasant change. And Pete talked about a growing perpetual communion. That's what Zena is talking about today, about the fact that it's a perpetual connection. I was quite proud of the fact that at home I was on the sort of minimum Wi-Fi, you know, amount. And I was managing it quite well, and this was a few years ago. And then suddenly, boom, a bill came, and it was just off the chart. And I rung the company, and I said, this can't possibly be right. Look, you look at my history, all the way along, it's fine. The person on the other end said, have you had someone come and visit with an iPad? And I thought, yeah, I have. Beth Baroni has got an iPad, an iPad mini, an iPhone, and everything else. But the thing with an iPad is it's perpetually going backwards and forwards for updates. And it completely destroyed my... So I thought, oh, well, I better do that, and I whacked it up to the full amount. Now, you know, that's what God wants. He wants a growing, perpetual communion, that there isn't any disconnection. This is, we're not pen friends with God. When Tanya and I were courting, that was the word I was going to use. Then I thought, that's a bit old-fashioned. Then I thought, going out, no one says that anymore. I don't know what the word is. Anyway, put in there the hip new word for, we were engaged, but I was living in England and Tanya was living in New Zealand. And we sent letters to each other. And we've got a big box of them. That trunk that the kids used the other week, which came here full of eggs, that's my trunk, well, our trunk, and it's full of letters. It normally has full of letters and tapes that we sent to each other. And Tanya was a lot better than I was. I took to recording cassettes. Now, for you young people, that something's about this big. with a bit of tape, magnetic tape in it that goes round and round. And I could just talk, and then I would send it. There were a few occasions when the batteries on the cassette ran down. Now, what that means is that the tape was going slower, and so my voice was being recorded slower. When Tanya played it at full speed, it sounded like she was going out with Mickey Mouse, you know? Lost some of the, you know, the Barry Whiteness of it all, you know? I'll leave that to your imagination, people. Pete talked about a life-changing activity that prayer was, and it was passionate. And then we talked together about that, what that meant. And I want to kind of follow on from that. One of the challenges Pete set was at 12 o'clock, set an alarm on your phone and then say the Lord's Prayer. So who did that? Who has done that? Who's got any experience of it? Okay, anyone want to say anything about that? Anything that they found? I'm looking for Daniel. You did it as well, didn't you? Let's get a bit of interaction here. It's not going to work, is it? What you tell me what happened when your alarm went off? You'll have to use this, otherwise it won't be recorded.
Well,
you have to hold it to your mouth as well.
It sounds like it's coming through. But I was at work, and I was in the car with my work colleague, Monica, and the alarm went off, and we started praying. And, it's good. It sort of gave us energy and broke away all the other stuff that was going on. It felt like we were resting.
So,
it's good.
Okay, excellent. Well done, Daniel. Give him a hand clap. It's good. I went into the Hawthorns retirement, I don't know how they describe it, retirement in style, I think, or something like that. And when I was in there, it was 12 o'clock, and I was talking about what we were doing and encouraging them, because sometimes when, you know, some of them can't get out to church, and so I like to take what we're doing and what's happening in the world, as it were, in there. And I told them what we were doing, and just as we were saying the Lord's Prayer together, Tanya's alarm went off, which she thought she'd put on silent, and so we were encouraging them. So let me encourage you. 12 o'clock, set an alarm, have a look at the clock, think, let's say the Lord's Prayer together. Doesn't matter what version it is, just say it. It means we're doing something together. We're connecting with Him, but we also know we're connecting with others in the church and around the world who are doing the same thing. Today, I just want to do a number of things. One, I just want to give you a few more pointers about prayer. This is not the environment to teach you an exhaustive list of praying. At starting point, last week we were able to discuss in detail more and question and ask, what does that mean? What does intercession mean? What does this mean? What does that mean? And those are the environments where we want to encourage you to learn more. But today I just want to give you some more headlines to encourage you to pray and to be in the presence of God. We've heard it all today through the prayer meeting and through what we've worshipped together and what we've sung about the presence of God. And that is our original design. Genesis 3 and verse 10. If we go back to verse 8, I don't know if that's possible, but it says, the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord as he walked in the garden in the cool of the day, and they hid from the Lord among the trees of the garden. But the Lord called to the man and said, "Where are you?" That's, for some of us, that's what God's saying to us today. Where are you? Where are you? I thought we had a connection. Are you there? Where are you? One of the things when Tanya and I were communicating, telephone calls to New Zealand were not only expensive, but rubbish. And so you'd ring and say, "Are you there? Are you there?" And then the echo would sort of come back. And then you'd awkwardly, "No, you talk." "No, you talk." No, and You know, but the essence was, are you there? Have we made a connection? This is the original plan of God, that in the cool of the day, that the God was going to walk with his creation, with us. The Lord called to them, where are you? Verse 10 said, this is man. He answered, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. Two definitions of the kingdom of God and the kingdom of darkness is this. The kingdom of darkness is one of fear. The opposite to love is fear. So whatever you are afraid of does not come from God. It is not from his kingdom. And this is how God knew that there was a disconnection. I mean, he knew it, but this was the evidence of the disconnection. One, he was afraid, and two, he was ashamed. Shame, fear and shame are the things that separate us from God, from a connection from God. Fear of what God thinks of us, of what he might say to us, what he might do to us, and shame of the things that we've done that we don't want anyone to find out, except that God already knows. It's like a parent when you come home and find someone has crayoned all over the walls. You go, come here. What have you been doing? It's not that the parent doesn't know what has been going on. It's fairly obvious that, you know, but you want to hear it because that's part of the connection. You know the, to a certain extent, the rest of the story. What it's interesting is as it goes a little further on, it says the serpent deceived me, and I ate. The enemy is constantly wanting to deceive us about a connection with God. That is his method. He uses fear and deception to disconnect us from God. And so when we talk about prayer and we talk about a connection with God, we're not talking about something that is abnormal and that we're adding on to our normal life. We've got to understand that this is the original plan. This is what we should be doing. We should be in constant connection with God in his presence, feeling that there is nothing separating us and that there is backwards and forwards communication perpetually. That's what it is to be in someone's presence. I mean, we all saw pictures of Obama and the Queen. And the fact is, I saw the Queen. I saw her on television. But I didn't meet her face to face. You don't say I've met the Queen because I've seen her on TV. I mean, she came through Yatton. We had a visitor who came from New Zealand. And we said, oh, the Queen's coming today to the station. And they kind of thought, oh, this is a normal activity, you know? I mean, Yatton, for goodness sakes. Bless her, she was going to open a yogurt factory, you know? I mean, you know, there's lots that she does that doesn't make it to the news. But she came off the train, Yatton got a lick of paint, and then she came past in the car, waving, and we took photos. And, you know, one of the dangers of the modern... today's modern technology is that you're so keen to take a photo with your camera that you're not there. You're not actually there looking and seeing. You're going, am I? And then you go back and you relive it through the thing, but that's not the same thing. Put your phone away and just experience it. And God's call to us today is let's connect face to face. At the end of Deuteronomy, this is Deuteronomy 34, and it talks of this about Moses. One interesting aside, it says, Moses, this is when he died, was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak, nor his strength gone. Living in the presence of God, connecting to him in prayer, making that connection, is going to bring you physical, emotional, spiritual strength. Moses, who experienced walking with God the whole of his life, when he got to 120, he didn't die because he was worn out. He died because it was time for him to go and for the story to move on. But it wasn't because he was weak. And I'm really encouraged by that. I think prayer is not just something we have to do. It's nourishment. It's your daily bread, that connection with God. And then in verse 10, it says, since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, who knew whom the Lord knew face to face. Later on in Numbers, it refrains the same thing. And it says to people, weren't you afraid of speaking against my servant Moses? I don't speak in riddles to him. He knows me face to face. I speak to him face to face. I tell him what's going on. And so you see, God's bringing back, as soon as he can, a connection. Because that's what we are. We are communication people. We require and we only exist to be communicated with and to communicate with others, to connect with God and with others, to be connected. That's why isolation and rejection is such a terrible thing. That's why punishment for people is to disconnect them from human contact. I was going to stop in Job, but we could get sidetracked in Job. But if you want to hear God speaking and how tender he is, you know, Job is known largely for its conversation about kind of suffering, but actually there's passages in there that God says when he's trying to explain his character to Job, he's saying, hey, you know what, I know when the birds lay their eggs, when they feed their young. I'm the one who knows everything and is concerned about everything. And you know, later on, you know, we've got it in the hub. If God is concerned about, if he understands when a sparrow has fallen to the ground or when a bird has died, how much more does he care and love for us? The enemy would deceive you and tell you that he doesn't love you, that he is not interested in you, but you need to come back to the Word of God that says he does love you, he is interested in you, and when you connect with him, he won't tell you off, he won't be stern with you. We're running into his arms. The first song we sung, I want to run into your arms. And for some of us, we're deceived into thinking that we shouldn't run into his arms because his arms aren't open, his arms are crossed, and his face is stern. But when you see Jesus come in Matthew, Jesus puts a face on the Father. If you've seen Jesus, you've seen the Father. And in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36, this is Jesus speaking. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. We need to be that sheep without a shepherd. That term shepherd is where I get my name from, pastor, which is the Latin for someone who takes care of every element of life. It's not a shepherd with a dog whistling from a distant hilltop. It's someone who actually has a great concern. I love watching some of these farming programs because you see the actual love and concern that these farmers have for their animals. That they're staying up all night making sure their lambs have given birth. And you can say, well, it's just money making. It's a lot more than that. When you see them dragging out calves and trying to get them to giving them mouth to mouth. Did you see that one? Someone gave this calf mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to get it to, and picked it up, and it was just like frantic. And I thought, that is amazing. But that is what someone who has a love for their animals, and how much more should we be caring for each other? And so Jesus saw that these people were harassed and helpless. They were like sheep without anyone to take care of them. God knows us. And Pete said last week, you know, start from where you're at. You know, there isn't any shame. There isn't any guilt. He meets us where we're at. Don't compare yourself to others. Don't sort of say, well, they're so good at it. You just start where you're at, and God will meet you where you're at. It's interesting that in many places where that phrase, where that verse is written, it's by the feeding of the 5,000 in Luke and Mark, it goes on to be the feeding of the 5,000. And it's like Jesus saying, you know, not only am I going to teach you some spiritual things, but we're going to feed you as well. Because actually, you need to be taken care of completely. And prayer is not just about you doing some religious activity and then getting back to the hard work. It's about him resourcing you and feeding you and filling you up in every area of your life. When I read that passage, I thought of the passage in John where Jesus is the good shepherd, John 10. It says, I tell you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in some other way is the thief and the robber. The man who enters the gate is the shepherd. The watchman opens the gate for him and the sheep listen for his voice. For those of you who are understand the Middle East context, the sheep knew the voice. They literally knew the shepherd's voice. And all the sheep were put into the same corral. They were put into the same pen and they were looked after communally. And then the shepherd would come and he would call his sheep and his sheep who knew his voice would come out. I'd like to see that. We kind of don't give sheep enough credit, I don't think. Bar ram you. Throw in any sheep ones you want at this point, you know. Hey, sheep are pretty cool. Sometimes, when they're running around, you know. But all of the references to sheep are true in the Bible. When it says a sheep that is going to be shorn, if you seeing a sheep lying down, once they know they're going to have their wool cut off, and they completely behave. And I've been up in Scotland when they do them with the hand shears, and the sheep just lie there like, wow, this is amazing. And then as soon as you let them go, they're running around all over the place. Their sheep know, and this is what Jesus is saying. When he had brought out, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Verse 4, when he has brought out all his sheep, he goes ahead of them. And his sheep follow him because they know his voice. This is what Jesus is saying of us. We should know the voice of the Father. And we should follow it. And we should live it like we've been saying. Moment by moment by moment by moment. And it's a learning process. If we're just at the beginning of that process where we go to God for big decisions or big crises, I find personally it's the hardest time to hear God when you're needing the biggest decisions to be made. That's why you need to do it all the time so that you're far more confident when it comes time for the pressure decisions to know that you can hear his voice. You should be hearing it perpetually and from moment by moment, not an occasional visit. This was new concepts for people because they had only known the Father from a distance. They had only known God like the Mosaic Law, where once a year you might make it up to the temple. And if you were rich, if you were poor, you'd buy a couple of pigeons. And if you were rich, you'd take a lamb. And then you would sacrifice that. And once a year the high priest would cleanse himself for his own sins, and then he would go before God and God would cleanse the entire nation of their sins. But it was a very distant relationship. And Jesus is saying, this is a personal one. This is moment by moment, my sheep know my voice. And further on, when in the Bible, when it's being explained more fully, we get to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And the end of chapter 3, and this is talking about Moses, in verse 15, even to this day when Moses is read, a veil covers their heart. If you go back further, we're not like Moses in verse 13. We're not like Moses who would put a veil over his face to keep the Israelites from gazing at it while the radiance was fading away. Their minds were dull. From this day, the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It's not been removed, but only in Christ is it taken away. Even to this day when Moses is read, a veil covers their heart. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we who, with unveiled faces, all reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. This was talking about a veil of separation. Moses met God face to face, but then that glory that was placed in front of him so that the others couldn't see that glory because they couldn't handle it. They weren't prepared for it. And yet now it says here in verse 17, whoever turns to the Lord, whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. And that's an invitation. It's not, I'm praying, I can finally pray because I feel better, I don't feel ashamed, I've had a good week, I've done all my godly chores, I've prayed every 12 o'clock every day, I've said the Lord's Prayer in every version, and now God is acceptable. No, through Christ, whenever you turn to God, there's nothing that separates you from him. And that glory, that presence, transforms our lives. His presence transforms our lives. And if we believe that, then prayer becomes something that is just, wow, if I want to be transformed into his likeness, it's not about human effort. It's just about being connected with him, hanging around with him a bit more. I told you that when I hang around with my brother, I start to sound a bit more like him. It's true. And some of you are the same. You hang around with Australians, and suddenly at the end of your sentences, it goes up, so everything sounds like a question. everyone, you do. You start swearing a bit more. Because it's normal. That's what happens when you're in the presence of a different culture. Some people are great, you know, they hold on to their accent, come whatever, you know, they're from the north or they're from, you know, they're somewhere with a regional, strong regional accent, and they've lived in London for, you know, years, but they haven't dropped one, you know, iota of it. But others just adapt because you want to kind of be accepted. When I came from Cornwall, I was born in Cornwall. And I may have sounded like a Wurzel. I probably did a little bit. And living in North Somerset, you start to roll your R's. It's all car park. And, it's a beautiful accent. We'll get Andy up here. But you kind of adapt. You find yourself, you don't even know you're doing it. And when you're with God, when you're in his presence, when you're praying, when prayer is perpetually on your lips, you know what? You start to be transformed into his likeness. And you start to think like him. And you start to act like him. And you start to see the world like him. And you start to see your problems like him. And you start to see others and other people's problems like him. You can't approach a problem with God in fear, because perfect love casts out all fear. So if you're in the presence of God, you will first of all know that the fear of the situation is gone. But then God is the God of the future and the God of hope. And so he will fill you with a peace that passes understanding, that nothing has changed. And yet suddenly now things seem different and you're at peace. It's going to be okay. And then God is the God of hope, of all hope. And he puts in you a divine understanding that with him, nothing is impossible. And suddenly, you take a deep breath. And courage. And yes, I can do this. And then you walk out with a connection with him. And you meet the world. That's what happens in prayer. That's what happens in connection with God. His presence brings about the same dimension and his character, and we are transformed into his likeness. I've said all along, I'm going to not give you the what to do, but the why you should do it in prayer. And get you excited that we should spend time in his presence. Not coming up on the 8th of May to the 15th of May is a week of prayer, 24/7 prayer. We're going to get a sign-up sheet, and you'll be able to sign in. And if you've never done it, we're going to have a prayer tent in the office. So we're going to put up a tent in the office so that it's like an environment which is a little bit more private and a little bit more contained. And it's a place where you and others can go and just spend an hour in his presence, connecting with God, learning to pray. Sometimes this is the only moment that you guys get to sit still. And I know that because some of you fall asleep. And I think, man, your life must be hard because, or I must be very boring, one of the two. But mostly it's, hey, this is just, we've stopped. And when we've stopped, oh, boom. But like Jesus, I have compassion because I think you're harassed and you need a break. If you need, you know, that's life. But I'm aware that sometimes we use all of our time here to fill up with information. And I want to spend the next 15 minutes in God's presence. I want us to implement some of this and to hear his voice.